Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hi there, and welcome to the Explaining History podcast. And today I want to talk a little bit about Romania, the experience of the Holocaust in Romania, the experience of communism in Romania, and the difficulties of historical memory, and the difficulties of historical memory for a country emerging from communism. Now, I may have mentioned before that one of the most astute and valuable writers on modern European history is the late and undeniably great Tony Judd, who, if you haven't read his book Postwar yet, is really almost one of the kind of definitive texts on 20th century European history. And his the selection of his essays, the first selection of his essays, Reappraisals, is also well worth a read. And in 2007, he wrote an essay on post-communist Romania. And in it, he made the point that Romania remains, on paper, a European country. But in reality, its links to Europe are really quite tenuous. The capital, Bucharest, is closer to the old boundaries of the Ottoman Empire than it is to Brussels. And it has repeatedly found it very difficult to assert a modern European identity. Part of the reason for this is Romania developed really as a nation state incredibly late. 1888 was the year in which Romania is a clear sort of national state entity. It had gradually emerged from the its kind of former Ottoman past throughout the 19th century, and if you imagine that Italy and Germany in 1870 and 1871 respectively emerged as nation states and both found the transition to creating a core, stable sense of national identity extremely difficult and fraught. A nation state developing later than that was perhaps going to find it even more challenging. The sense of siege that Romania existed under, having powerful and dangerous neighbours on all sides, be it the Ottoman Empire, Russia, or Hungary, led to an aggressive nationalism within Romania, and this is something that is exploited later on. Romania is a country in the late 19th and early 20th centuries that has as mixed an ethnic makeup as the former Austro-Hungarian Empire and the Balkans indeed. And so during the upheavals of the 20th century, it was small wonder that Romania in the 30s and then during the war would have all sorts of inter-ethnic violence and an aggressive nationalism based around ethnic homogeneity, about the desire to create an ethnically pure nation, which spelled doom for Romania's Jews. The irony, of course, as Tony Judd points out, is that Bucharest was, by 1870, one of the, Virgin being one of the great capitals of Europe. It had some claim to being seen as the Paris of the East. It had doubled in size between 1870 and 1914 and was designed in Parisian style with great boulevards. It had some of the first oil-fired street lamps within Eastern Europe. It was a more advanced city than Vienna, and it was a place of boulevards and public parks, and had a great deal of wealth running through it, because Romania itself was a land of plentiful natural resources. So the Romania that has limped through the 20th century, largely as a result of the twin catastrophes of fascism and communism, and the post-communist nationalist governments that have been riven with corruption since, have left a potentially once abundant and wealthy society as one of the poorest in Europe. One of the outcomes of the Paris Peace Conference and the Treaty of Versailles was that Romania did rather well. Romania had benefited from the defeat of the Austro-Hungarian and Ottoman empires and the collapse of Russia. The three empires that surrounded her bequeathed her Bessarabia, Bukovina and Transylvania, and part of northern Bulgaria, which had obviously been one of the central powers. And the country increased from 138,000 square kilometres to 295,000, and its population doubled. But obviously its population didn't double, the number of ethnic Romanians didn't double, but the number of subjects of the new Romania did. So this was a huge fillip to Romanian ethnic nationalists, the likes of whom could be found in every country in Europe in the 19th century. The Treaty of Versailles gave the Romanian kingdom everything it could possibly have wanted from the war. And it was one of the larger countries within the within the central and eastern part of Europe. It also creates an enormous amount of ethnic tension along Romania's borders. The more population transfers you have within Eastern Europe following the Paris Peace Conference, the greater propensity of unlocking these ethnic hatreds. And this is something that Hitler very skillfully does in the second half of the 1930s, knowing, of course, that the beneficiaries of the Versailles Treaty, Poland, Czechoslovakia, Romania and Yugoslavia, and to some extent Hungary, were all bitterly jealous over slivers of land and groups of populations dotted between each other that the peacemakers had been unable to kind of properly adjudicate as to who should go where and who should have what. So Romania is surrounded by angry neighbours and has a large minority population which has grown from 8 to 27% with the stroke of a pen. Hungarians, Germans, Ukrainians, Russians, Serbs, Greeks, Bulgarians, Gypsies and Jews were all contained within this new Greater Romania. And much like Yugoslavia, it is this boiling pot of ethnic tensions. And Romanian nationalists would use the opportunity that the next war presented to ethnically cleanse their Greater Romania. So there seems to be, in many cases, if you look at Poland, is quite similar in this regard. The outcome of the First World War created the borders for these new nations, and the outcome of the Second World War created ethnically homogeneous populations, normally in the most violent way possible, with mass killings and mass expulsions, either during the war in the case of the Jews, or afterwards, with, in Poland's case, for example, the expulsion of ethnic German people. The pockets of non-Romanians, who were now forced to be subjects of the Romanian crown, were described as foreigners. And this has left Romania really in the grips of a struggle to throughout the 20th century to assert its sense of identity. And the idea of Romanian-ness became a very pastoral one, a very agricultural one. You had Germans or Greeks or Hungarians or Jews occupied in towns and cities, in professions, in trade, in commerce, and therefore Romanian nationalists looked to the peasantry as the kind of the shining example of what real Romanianness was, the honest salt of the earth types that work the soil with their hands, and aren't the slippery mercantile characters who will rip you off on market day. They are obviously foreigners and don't really understand Romanian ways. Religion also plays a large part in this, and the ethnic mixing pot that Romania had become after the First World War, which included people of a variety of different faiths, including Lutheran Christians, Catholics, and Jews, and obviously the majority are Orthodox Christians, who were mainly ethnic Romanians. Orthodox Christianity becomes another way of adjudicating who is a Romanian and who is not. At the start of the war, in 1939, Marshal Ion Antonescu was the dictator of Romania, and he played his cards close to his chest. He was obviously sympathetic towards Nazi Germany and broadly looked to emulate many of Hitler's ideas in Romania, and he was cagey about which way he saw the war going, much like, say, Mussolini, but in 1940 formally allies himself to Nazi Germany, assuming that the war is all but won and there will be further territorial gains at the peace conference thereafter. He faithfully allies himself with Hitler and joins in the invasion of the USSR, which is a catastrophe for Romania. And they lose more troops in the USSR than any other of Hitler's allies. The result, obviously, by 1945, is a Soviet occupation of Romania, and communism that lasted until 1989. One of the claims that has often been made by sympathisers for Antonescu is that he, despite his overt anti-Semitism, managed to save a large number of Romania's Jews. And if we look at it in one sense, well, this appears to have a degree of validity. 441,000 Jews were listed on the April 1942 census, and the overwhelming majority of those survived. These are Jews within ethnic Romania, and the Antonescu had decided by 1942 that deportations of these Jews were probably not advisable because the winds of war were turning against Hitler, and there may well be repercussions afterwards. But by this time, already, hundreds of thousands of Jews had been deported from Bessarabia and Bukovina, and these were territories that were given to Stalin in 1940, and then taken back with a vengeance, with a kind of bloodthirsty, anti-Semitic, anti-communist vengeance after the invasion of the Soviet Union in 1941.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Romanians were happy collaborators here with the Germans and did an immense amount to make the work of the German army, the SS, easier here in deporting Jews and killing a great many of them on the spot. The Romanian army burned alive 19,000 Jews in Odessa in 1941. They shot 16,000 in ditches in Dalnik in the same year, and they were actually the subject of complaints by the Germans for their treatment of Jews, if you can imagine such a thing, during the deportations. So there were there was a staggering number of Jews murdered by the Romanian state. One of the reasons why it has become convenient for other European states to point the finger exclusively at Germany with regards to the Holocaust, not suggesting for a moment that these are illegitimate accusations, but one of the reasons why it's become so convenient for the European states to commemorate the Holocaust in a particular way is because it helps to sidestep inconvenient questions and inconvenient points about domestic anti-Semitism in countries like Romania, indeed in countries such as France, and their involvement in deportations and mass killings. And those buried truths that very rarely see the light of day, that very rarely are examined, still have an important role in national narratives. People know these things happened. This is things that is very difficult to discuss or to be open or explicit about or to be, dare I say, honest about. But it doesn't mean to say that populations are unaware of them. You know, it is in towns and villages across Romania, the 760,000 Jews who were there before the war are largely absent now. Antonescu used the term total Romanization during the war, and he said that this is something that needed to be completed by the time the war ended. So the war for Antonescu was a perfect opportunity to really create this ethnically homogenous state, and the Jews were obviously the first target. But also Hungarians were another target of the country's nationalists. And unlike Hungary itself, which was occupied in 1944 by the Germans, where the Hungarian Holocaust really goes into full swing, Romania was the only German ally that didn't require a German occupation in order to participate wholeheartedly in the Holocaust and to do everything from reclassifying the Jews legally and as non-citizens through to mass deportations to Auschwitz. Romania's experience of communism was also quite a unique one. Romanian communist leaders Nicolae Ceausescu was the only European communist leader, for example, to meet both Queen Elizabeth II of Great Britain and President Richard Nixon. Romanian communism, much like that of Poland and other East European Soviet satellite states, was infused with its own parochial nationalism. Many of the more libertarian, internationalist, solidarity-based ideas that infuse communism were rather lost on the Romanian Communist Party, who still looked upon Hungarians and Jews as being threats to the nation and troublemakers. And throughout the 1950s, the idea that communism and nationalism could somehow be intertwined, could somehow be woven together to create a kind of a national communism, was actively pursued by the party. And one of the effects of this is to diminish Soviet control in Romania. Throughout the 1950s, the idea that Romania, whilst a communist nation, could chart its own destiny, could make its own decisions and own choices about what to do, placed burdens on Soviet and Romanian relations. Particularly after the death of Stalin. The death of Stalin, as we've seen so many times in this podcast, presented opportunities throughout the communist world for fracturing, for determining of different ideas in different directions. And the same is true in Romania. The West spent no time at all in coaxing the Romanian leadership, particularly after 1965 when Nicolae Ceausescu came to power, to be a pliant outpost of not so much anti-communism, but anti-Soviet sentiments in Eastern Europe. Western diplomats and leaders thought that Ceausescu could be a thorn in the side of the Soviets in the way that Tito had been a thorn in Stalin's side, and that this would be a great way of undermining and weakening the Warsaw Pact. Nixon visited visited Bucharest before he visited China, for example. He visited in 1969, and he was referred to by George McGovern, no, Ceausescu was, as one of the among the world's leading proponents of arms control, obviously with no hint of irony. The British visited Ceausescu on a state visit, and in 1983, Vice President George Bush, senior, not junior, referred to Ceausescu as a good communist. And this was, as far as Ceausescu went, he gained the kudos of overseas recognition. He had, as I said, a nice state visit to Great Britain, where he got to meet the Queen, which is obviously the ambition of every great communist. Romania became the first Warsaw Pact country to enter the General Agreement on Trades and Tariffs, now the World Trade Organization, to receive IMF loans, or to get preferential trading status with the European Community. And eventually, in 1975, gained the United States' most favoured nation status, which has all sorts of positive trade benefits. The consequences of this really were not great wealth for Romania, but the ability for Romania to sell agricultural produce that it mainly specialised in return for manufactured goods and in return for aircraft, particularly. It's maybe an apocryphal tale, but it's worth telling anyway. In the mid-1980s, a trade deal was done between Romania and Great Britain, where the trade was Romania would supply strawberries in return for Boeing jumbo jets. So Romania obviously had to provide an awful lot of cheap agricultural produce for, you know, perhaps comparatively less in return. And this is kind of how Romania was treated as a convenient third world country on Europe's borders, that is treated in the way that all third world countries are treated by first world ones. Handy places to buy lots of stuff from for not very much. The other thing that Romania received in large quantities throughout the 1980s is loans, debt. The Romanian population were saddled by debt by 1989. Part of this was a strategy employed by other European communist countries throughout the Cold War era, realising that Stalinism had not worked and that angry, restive populations were not willing to accept low living standards anymore. The strategy of borrowing large sums in order to pay for consumer goods, mainly from the West, was used instead. Throughout this period of time, obviously whilst the West having dealings with Romania, a horrific human rights record of essentially gulag-style slave labour camps and appalling attitudes towards the women's reproductive rights, which are partly the result of this obsession of building a large ethnically homogenous population that continued long into communism, resulted in the images that we all became familiar with after the end of communism of the appalling Romanian orphanages. All these children who were born because of a refusal of the state to allow abortions were then abandoned and left to the tender mercies of the Romanian orphanage system. The need to pay back creditors also meant that Romania had to continue heavy exports and do things like shut off power at certain points in the day to export electricity to Germany and Italy. When communism ended in 1989, Ceausescu was overthrown and put on trial and executed in a skillfully staged coup, which can't really be seen as a people's revolution in the way that the Velvet Revolution in much of the rest of Eastern Europe was. This is an overthrow of Ceausescu by other party elements, who then neatly stepped over into the post-communist era without shedding some ideological baggage, but none of the power and none of the embezzled wealth. So where does this leave us? Well, part of the reason for the kind of the tragic 20th century in Romania is based around the kind of the development of Romania in the late 19th century and the need to develop some kind of core national identity, and the relative lack of success in doing so. But also, this is part of the part of the tragedy of Romania as well, is being this now impoverished state on Europe's borders, which can only but continue to be exploited as its status within Europe remains unclear and the economic disparities between Europe and Romania remain unclear. Anyway, I hope you found this interesting today. We've got some exciting news. A new writer for Explaining History, Tyrell Eskelson, has just submitted the draft for a new Explaining History ebook, The American Century, which should be with us hopefully for around Christmas time. The new Explaining History range of study guides is developing still with we should be expecting the new Explaining History Study Essentials on the Paris Peace Conference soon. That's headed off to the publishers. And the new Explaining History International Relations 1918-39 is reaching its conclusion. So that's where we're going at the moment. We're focusing on making as much useful stuff for students as we possibly can do. But I'm obviously trying to make sure that we're talking to everybody out there who's interested in modern history. Anyway, I hope you found this useful today, and I'll catch you again on the next Explaining History podcast. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.